From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Hey, welcome back to Servcast. My name's Tyler. We're so glad you joined us today, and I'm here with your host, Dr. William Lamb.
Man, we are going to talk about coffee, right?
Coffee, so...
Not just coffee.
Yeah. We'll get into it. One thing I want to... So, this last episode we put out, Justin Gibney, did you see that he put out a new article on Christianity Today?
I did not.
It literally came out like the day before the day that we posted the episode. So, you need to go out to Christianity Today, check out Justin Gibney's new article. It's great.
That's exciting.
But coffee. So, we have our little routines here, you know, to kind of get in the flow of like, all right, it's Servcast time. I got to get out of my little introvert shell and act like I enjoy talking to people. And so, you know, we set the mic up. We start about 20 minutes before we're going to actually do our interview, get the computer, everything. And one of the things I almost always do, I make a cup of coffee. And you pick on me because you've waited on me to get this cup of coffee. But I'm telling you, it's essential. And if we have a bad episode, it's probably because you got on to me about not bringing in my cup of coffee.
But there's a bigger story than just a simple cup of coffee.
It's
what can the coffee do to make transformation for somebody else's life, right?
It transforms my life, I'll tell you that right now. So
our guest today is in the coffee business, but he's also in the gospel business.
Yeah, he's an Anglican priest. Our guest today is Jonathan David Golden. He's an Anglican priest. He's also with the Land of a Thousand Hills Coffee. And he's the author of the book, Be You Do Good. And it's a great book. I highly recommend it to all of our listeners. I really should pick that up, especially if you're wrestling through, you know, what should I do in life? What's God's will? That never-ending quest for what is my purpose? This is a good book that can help you kind of wrestle with those questions.
So if you're looking for a complex definition of how you can make a difference in somebody else's life, that's fine. You'll probably catch some of that in this episode. But if you're looking at simple ways in which you can impact somebody's life on a daily basis that has long-term effect for them, their families, and, you know, on down the road, man, this episode is going to speak to that. And so let's just don't delay that any longer. Let's go straight to this conversation that we have.
All right, let's get to it. That interview with Jonathan's coming up next, and then we'll be back with some takeaways. And we're joined now by Jonathan David Golden.
Jonathan, welcome to Servcast, man. We're glad you came with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Looking forward to spending some time with you.
So tell me about you and about your ministry and what you're doing. I mean, I know you're an Anglican priest. You're also founder of Thousand Hills Coffee, a few other things that you're involved in. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're doing for the kingdom of God today.
Okay, as you said, I'm an Anglican priest. I'm also involved in the coffee world. In fact, I'm one of two what I call coffee pastors. There's another fellow in Rwanda who's a pastor and involved in coffee as well. And when he and I meet, we shake hands knowing we're very few. I'm married to my wife of almost 25 years now, a couple sons, Johnny, who's 22, and Josh, who's 20. I live here in Roswell, Georgia. And I enjoy engaging redemption.
I like that intentional pause there, because when somebody says something like that, there's always something to come after the comma, you know? So just go ahead and we'll jump into it. So tell me, how do you define redemption, and what are some ways we can do that?
Well, I think God created this world, and then he invited us to come and continue that creation process with him. And I believe the Holy Spirit's all the time looking at good things to be done, and he wants us to partner with it and engage redemption. One of my friends in Rwanda, Bishop John Ruchihana, said redemption must be engaged. It's not a philosophy. It's not a thought. It's something we do. And whether it be through coffee, whether it be through the way we treat the local waiter or waitress at our favorite restaurant, we can choose to engage redemption, or we can choose not to.
Good deal. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes because I know you've got a powerful story about, you know, redemption. But before we get there, let's introduce to our listeners what the Land of a Thousand Hills Coffee Company is all about and what you guys are doing to transform people's lives in Rwanda.
Okay. So this is our, we're beginning our 11th year. We've finished 10 years of drink coffee, do good. What I saw about 10 years ago was Rwanda was still recovering from a horrible tragedy, the genocide. And I'd asked one of our bishops there how we could help. He said that prior to the war, they had good coffee. Mm. My wheels got turning. I said, what if people of faith would drink a coffee that matched the message we preached about, what we talked about? So went to Rwanda, met coffee farmers. God broke my heart for these people. And ordered a 12-pound coffee roaster off of eBay, got 20 sacks of green beans in, and we started with a mission of drinking coffee, doing good. Today we have 1,000 churches that use our coffee. We have 3 of our own coffee houses here in the Atlanta area and 5 coffee houses that are franchises throughout the U.S.
So
we're the only coffee company that's vertically integrated, meaning we touch the coffee from the bean to the barista.
So they come to us here in the U.S. as beans, and then you guys take care of roasting them from there, right?
Correct. Yep. We have a roastery here just north of Atlanta in Roswell.
So tell us about the folks in Rwanda, you know, the people that pick it and clean it and, you know, take care of it every day. Tell us a little bit about, give us a word picture or two of what it looks like over there for those folks.
Okay, sure. So first of all, I believe that God gives us each a work to do, and more times than not, the work that we're meant to do is right in front of us. And for these coffee farmers, prior to us working with them, they were making as little as 40 cents per pound for their coffee. Mm. It takes 60 cents a pound just to grow coffee. So the European coyotes, as they call them, would come through and just pay as little as they could. Now, just because we can do something doesn't mean we should do something. So what we did is we went and formed cooperatives. Our farmers are now making $2 a pound.
Wow.
We ask our farmers, what's your number one goal? It's to send their children to school. We call our process collaborative trade. We're a for-profit company, yet we go in with eyes at redemption. We want the farmers to become strong through coffee. Yet, when they can't get strong through their work, we come alongside with our nonprofit. So we've been able to build the school for 500 children. We have a sheep farm for perpetrators and survivors of the genocide. We do water projects and just do things to help out the community.
So how can something as simple as me, you know, buying a cup of coffee here in the United States affect me? I'm hearing you talk about ways this might be affecting the people in Rwanda, but how? What transformations have you seen in those persons here that, you know, have committed to this particular collaborative effort of buying and trading here?
Yeah, I believe that when you engage in something that's good, it has an effect on you, the consumer or the partner. In fact, I don't like to use the word consumer because the root of that word is voyager. It's a voyeur. It's somebody that takes away. It's somebody that destroys. And I don't like to think in terms of consumers or producers. I like to think in terms of the community. And when you're engaging in this worldwide community by having a great cup of coffee, you can taste it. Mm. You experience it. We've had, we had one couple came to our coffee shop and they said, we don't believe in God, but we want to buy a coffee bicycle for one of your farmers for Christmas. Mm. I said, thank you. So it's okay that you don't believe in God, but he believes in you.
Oh.
And yeah, they didn't have the faith figured out, but they knew that they wanted to do good and participate in this.
Man, that's a powerful story, Jonathan. So 1,000 churches are using your coffee. So articulate for us and help us to understand today, how does, you know, the work of Land of 1,000 Hills of Coffee connect to the mission of the local church and what we really should be doing? I heard a YouTube talk, you know, and you, I think you had a pastor ask you about how does coffee share the gospel, and I think you referred back to how does what you do in the pulpit do the gospel? Shouldn't we be in the business of doing something?
Exactly. There for a while, every week I would have, you know, pastors writing me, and one in particular had said, what you're doing through the coffee is good, but when do you share the gospel? And I responded and said, what you're talking about on Sunday is good, but when do you do the gospel? And he, for some reason, didn't become one of our coffee customers. my friend Gabe Lyons wrote a book called Unchristian, and what Gabe found was most non-Christians don't like Christians because we act unchristian. We're known for what we're against, not for what we do. So I think a church that uses Land of 1,000 Hills Coffee or another coffee that does good, they're demonstrating by what they serve that they care for people, that they're making a difference in people's lives. The other thing they're doing is creating great first impression. Mm. You know, oftentimes the first welcoming somebody has when they visit a new church is a cup of coffee. And when you offer them specialty coffee, which Thousand Hills is, you're saying, we value you. You know, we're bringing our best to welcome you versus the cheapest we can get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, of course, God gave his best, right, when he gave his son Jesus to bring about redemption. So tell us about this story. I heard about it, but our listeners haven't. So tell us about this story of this redemption in Rwanda when you have, I'll let you tell the story about, you know, two people coming together on a coffee field whose lives are changed, one who was in the war and one who was a victim of the war in sorts.
Yeah, so I was able to sit down with two of our farmers, Onosphere and Seraphine, and they shared their stories. And Onosphere shared how he grew up next to Seraphine. They were neighbors, played with each other as kids. And then the war started, and Onosphere, who came from a Hutu background, went and joined the military. He was indoctrinated to go and kill all the Tutsis. So he then engaged in this horrendous process of destroying another ethnic group and murdered all of Seraphine's family. Went after her. She went into hiding and stayed there till the war was over. Onosphere went to prison, and when he was in prison, he heard the gospel preached that there is a God who sent his son that offered forgiveness. And he accepted Christ as a Savior, experienced that forgiveness. Rwanda established what's called the Gacaca courts, or courts in the grass. And what the president said was, we cannot keep one-tenth of our population in prison while we've lost another tenth in the genocide. So he said, if perpetrators were willing to come back to their villages, sit in a circle, confess their sins to their neighbors, and if their neighbors were willing to forgive them, they would be released. Mm. So Onosphere did that. He was released. When I sat down with Onosphere and Seraphine, they said that the church told them how to be reconciled. Mm. The government encouraged reconciliation, but through their common work in coffee, they experienced reconciliation. See, I don't think reconciliation is a word, nor is it a mindset. It's an action. Mm-hmm. And just like Paul tells us to work out our salvation in fear and trembling, anybody that's married knows you work out reconciliation in the trenches. It's a process. So for us, giving them common work gives them experience. And now for Onosphere and Seraphine in particular, they wanted more work. So I've always wanted to be a shepherd. My wheels got turning. We purchased some land, acquired 50 head of sheep, and now Onesir and Seraphim are the shepherds tending these sheep as they work out their reconciliation.
Wow. And what a story for everybody else around there, and obviously for generations to come, that, you know, common ground, both in Christendom, both in the gospel, you know, and also in coffee, man. It builds capacity for transformation and reconciliation. That's a great story, John.
That's right.
That is a great story. Let's shift from Lands of a Thousand Hills for just a few minutes, and let's talk about a book you recently wrote, Be You, Do Good. So what inspired you to write this kind of book? And, you know, the title, I mean, it's very interesting. How did you come up with that?
Well, when I looked at this wonderful adventure that God invited me into to launch this coffee enterprise, which, you know, my background was in industrial psychology. I never dreamed I'd be doing this, yet he's invited me to this wonderful work, and I wanted to capture that journey in such a way that others could find their own journey, that this could be an example of a crazy, wild drive that others can find their own path through.
So you used a term, and you said that God invited you to that work. Now, a lot of people talk about calling, okay? So God's called me to do this, or God's called me to do that. And I know you touch on that in your book. So can you define calling for us and speak a little bit about, you know, this idea of maybe the varying differences or different opinions of calling? And as you see it, how is God inviting us into his work, and how does that relate to calling?
I am not so sure that God has a specific calling for us that he calls us to from the future. But I am confident in the fact that he created each of us in our mother's wombs, that he has gifted us with talents, that he redeemed experiences, both negative and positive, and he is sending us out. So rather than spending our time saying, well, what is my calling, and then being worried about missing it, I think we're better off looking at what have my experiences been? What are my talents? What makes me come alive? Where do I feel the joy of God? And then do that. And as we do that, we're being better stewards of what's in front of us versus wasting the opportunity we have now because we're worried about this mystical calling that's out there in the future.
Hmm. So how do you see this calling as an individual fitting into how that we can framework, you know, God's overall intention for the world? I mean, obviously, some, you know, are they called to preach? Are they called to pastoral work? Are they called to an Anglican priest? You know, are they called to be coffee farmers? So unpack that for me just a few minutes, you know, especially in the mindset of college students or going to college, trying to figure out a career and figure out a choice and what they're going to do for the rest of their life. How do we really navigate that terminology in that?
So I'll talk a little bit about the theology behind that, and then we'll talk a little bit about some practical steps that college students could take. In Isaiah 45, God was pretty frustrated with the Israelites because they weren't welcoming the stranger in the midst, they weren't taking care of the widow or the orphan. And through the prophet, he raised his voice and he said, I did not tell you to worship me in chaos. I didn't create this world of chaos. I created to be inhabited. And the Hebrew word for the word inhabited there, the English is dwelling place. And what he's saying is, I created this world to be a dwelling place. And I've told you to worship me and create dwelling places for others. So I think the first thing we need to do is say, how is my work creating a dwelling place for myself? Because you need to take care of yourself and your family. But how is it creating a dwelling place for your neighbor? You know, the products we buy, are they destroying our environment or are they taking care of our environment? The products we buy, are they creating a dwelling for whoever crafted that? And I think as we do that, God's pleased to dwell with us as well. Wouldn't it be cool at the end of each day we could say, huh, look at our work the way God did and say, it's good. Mm. It's good because I created more of a dwelling place. and get the sense that God's looking at our work and saying it's good. So I'd say that's the basis. How do you know your specific task in that? That's the title of the book, Be You, Do Good. Who are you? I mean, you're gifted at interviewing as you're speaking to me. How are you being yourself and using that for the kingdom?
Hmm. And I think that's hopeful for a lot of people, because the challenge is that, you know, calling sometimes can be perpetuated through generations and relationships with families, et cetera. And the concern I have, and I appreciate you unpacking that a little bit, is that we find people that will, you know, limit their potential or their possibility because maybe it doesn't fit within the frame of what they think they should be doing. How does Scripture open up for us the idea that, you know, really it's about being and doing, and does God really care about where we do that as much as he cares about how we do it?
You know, my dad, who's now 92, joined World War II when he was 16, immigrated to the U.S. from England. He'd always wanted to be a pastor or own a Christian bookstore, but he was a pipe fitter working in steel mill. And finally, he kind of gave up on that construct of going to seminary. He said, I'm going to do the best that I can as a pipe fitter. Soon he became the shop steward and the union steward, and he'd have to do safety meetings. At the end of each safety meeting, he'd pull out his daily bread, a little devotional. He said, anybody who wants to stay can stay. And all these crusty old iron workers and pipe fitters would stay for devotions. And pretty soon, when one of them got put in jail for drinking too much, they'd call my dad, or if they had marriage problems, they'd give him a call. And my dad became a well-respected pipe fitter, but he became a pastor within that. If he would have just focused on leaving his work to go do something else, become this pastor, he would not have been a good steward of what had been in front of him for those many years.
Mm. I grew up as the son of a pastor who was a carpenter and did the very same thing in many, many ways. And my dad was, I was so confused by it back in the day, I think, because dad would always, it's like he would volunteer to go to the smaller churches so that he could both build those up, you know, numerically and spiritually, but also build those up as far as, you know, a facility in which that would be conducive for them to meet the community's needs. And then he would get it to a nice place, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe we can stay here for a while now. But then dad would say, you know, I need to go somewhere else and repeat that. And I thought, how willing are we to say to God, you know, maybe it's the small things that really multiply into the large impacts that we may not even get a chance to see on, as my dad would say, this side of glory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and just as you say that, it's he's utilizing his gifts, and they're being used. It's just like with the coffee farmers. They don't grow coffee to bury in a hole. The coffee gets utilized and sent over here. And in a similar sense, your dad looked at his gifts and said, how can we reach the most people with this talent that God's given me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me take our listeners to a quote for just a minute that you said in one of your videos. And you said, if you think your calling is one specific thing, you may spend all your time trying to find it instead of getting started where you are. So for those listening today, how would you suggest they begin to start? Let's say somebody says, you know, man, I was going to be a pastor because my dad was a pastor. And that's great. We need pastors. Or, you know, any one of those scenarios, where can they just step back, punt, start over, and you know, make a better ending before frustration takes them out of the game?
I would say start now. So to the listener out there who's listening to this podcast, right this moment, what is something you can do in the next hour that's utilizing a resource you have to do good? And I mean it. What will you do in the next hour with, it could be financial resource, it could be your car, it could be a talent, but how can you use that and then get started within the next hour and see where it goes? God is big enough to stop you dead in your tracks, literally, if he doesn't want you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, for me, you know, with all of our work in Rwanda, God invited us, and I don't know that he has so much a will as he has a whimsy. I think he wanted to do great work, and he's like, Jonathan, come check this out. Mm. Take a step. Mm. And I could have said no, and I don't think he would have been mad at me. He'd have then maybe called me again, and I still could have said no, and he would have gone and invited somebody else to go create this great work in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. But we sometimes worry too much about the rules instead of taking a step.
So now you're a coach in a lot of ways. So for those persons who are saying, okay, I need to start, and I get it, man. You know, I'll buy 2 gallons of milk today when I go to the store and give one to my friend down the hall, or I'll invite my friend to go with me to the store because they don't have a car. Okay, I get that piece. But how can we as coaches and mentors help people to begin to identify what maybe they can't see themselves?
Well, a friend of mine, Charles Jenkins, who's pastor of a large African-American church in Chicago, he's got a song. He says, be careful what you say. Because, you know, by our words we bless and by our words we curse. So are we able to call out the gifting that we see in somebody else? So we just had one of my employees here, it was his birthday, and we always have lunch brought in for people's birthday. And our custom here at Land of a Thousand Hills is we all go around the table and we share what we appreciate about that person. And it's always neat for me to see fellow employees identify and call out the giftedness in their coworkers. And we just did this 30 minutes ago, and what's cool is the person is giving the compliment. They're becoming stronger because they're practicing healthy authority, if you will. And the person is receiving it. It's almost like drinking a glass of cold water on a hot day. They're strengthened. So I'd say, first of all, as coaches and mentors, identify the good in people and say, wow, I saw the way you were interacting with that person. You've got compassion. Or I saw the way you fixed that car. You know, you have a talent. So that simple thing of identifying the good and calling it out.
One of my favorite scriptures, I think it's Ephesians 5:18. I'll use my version. I'll quote it my way, I guess. Our listeners can look it up. But, you know, be not drunk with wine, or be not controlled by the flesh, but instead be filled with the Spirit. And I really like the latter part of that passage where it talks about don't let anything of the flesh of sorts rob you for an opportunity to really do good for somebody else. And man, I tell you, I really appreciate your references to our relationship with God and how that God can really impact our lives so that we can be, you know, salt and light. And sure is exciting what you guys are doing over in Rwanda. So if one of our listeners wants to get connected to you guys and wants to serve in some way, how can they do that, Jonathan?
First of all, our website is drinkcoffeedogood.com. That's drinkcoffeedogood.com. Order a bag of coffee. If you have coffee at your church or your school or your workplace, think about changing the coffee you drink and changing a life. In addition, we've always got different projects going on. We're in the midst of what we call our Bwenda Water Project right now. Village of Bwenda has 350 families. Each we're walking 3 hours a day to get water through our partners. We just raised enough money to put over 12,000 gallons of water cisterns in. So now the young girls can go to school instead of fetching water. They can get involved in the water projects. Go on a trip with us. We take 2 to 3 trips each summer. Love to have college students go with us.
That's good news. I actually saw a video on the water project, so I would encourage any of our listeners, you know, can they go to a website where they can get all of your videos? Where can they get it from? Drinkcoffeedogood.com?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. They can go to drinkcoffeedogood.com and access them there. They can also go to Vimeo, and if you just search Land of a Thousand Hills on Vimeo, they're there as well as on YouTube.
Good. Okay, closing thoughts, Jonathan. Closing thoughts for our listeners on anything in your heart today you want to share with them about, you know, where they go. You talk, man. Any last closing thoughts?
I would say this, that your God, your Creator, your Father, and your friend right this moment is with anticipation excited about you taking a step. And I would say, regardless of the sin that you committed last year, last month, last night, or an hour ago, take a step. I think, I'll go to preaching here in a second, but I think sometimes we let our own sinfulness sideline us from doing good, and we say, well, once I get this part of my life cleaned up, I'll take a step. But the way I understand grace is we can take a step right now.
Yeah.
And if you don't take a step to do good, you're more apt to take more steps to do bad. And by the way, with the world, what I found is when we invite non-Christians into the good work we're doing, they want to join in as well.
Yeah.
But we have to do it first. We have to take that step.
Man, I really appreciate you taking time, Jonathan. I know you're busy, but we're going to champion this cause as often as we can, and we're going to celebrate what you're doing. And just like your friend today and, you know, having that birthday party, sometimes I think God just wants us to create opportunities for our brothers and sisters that we've not yet met in ways in which, you know, we can all celebrate the birth and the life and the giving of Jesus so that we can be redeemed. Man, I really appreciate you taking time to join us today.
Thank you, and next time you're in Atlanta, come over and we'll have a cup of coffee together.
We will. We might make a trip just for that cause.
Sounds good. Take care. God bless.
See you.
Hey, what a great conversation we just had with Jonathan David Golden. And I tell you what, man, it is super simple, but it's super complex. We can boil this down to just do what you can today.
Start, right?
You gotta
start somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, we work in a university, right? So we're working with students who are trying to figure out, like, the plan that God has for their lives. And while, you know, we pitch this as an extremely complicated thing, it's as simple as look at your story, look at your gifts, and what can you do today? How can you contribute?
And I think what was refreshing from this interview, Tyler, was the idea that, you know, people are drinking coffee, so why not turn coffee into a business for people in a country that, you know, typically it's exporting and they're, you know, being mistreated and not making any money and all of the above and all of the injustices that occur. But now, you know, they're actually building farmers. And what a great story of reconciliation and restoration between two farmers that had experienced a terrible, you know, loss in war, but yet now they're coming together. Man, it's just a great story.
Yeah, and you know, we certainly live in a world now where what we do here, I mean, it impacts people on the other side of the world. I mean, we're in a globalized market, and our habits, I mean, whether we realize it or not, are affecting people both positively and negatively. So I love just the model that they've taken for Land of a Thousand Hills Coffee, and really appreciate that. You know, as a consumer, I can use my dollars and put them in a company that's going to make the world a better place in the end. And man, do I spend lots of money on coffee, so I'm pretty excited about that.
I don't even like coffee. And you know that. I don't even drink coffee, man.
You're going to drink coffee if we go see him, though.
I will, because I made a promise on the air that I would. But I think it's bigger than that to me. It's the idea of starting somewhere. And I think Jonathan gives us a very powerful illustration of something as simple as coffee is transformational. I don't know exactly how many farmers, you know, but I'm telling you, man, this is a growing business. And not that, you know, those in these countries are being mistreated. In fact, they are being raised up as business owners themselves. And, man, that was a powerful story. I don't know if you missed it or not, but if you did, you need to go back and listen to it. Powerful story of the reconciliation, the power of reconciliation as neighbors come together who have been divided by the tragedy of war, but now they're coming together for a common good and a common goal. It's just, like he said, it's do good, make a difference.
Yeah, and I think what here is, I mean, there's the affirmation of our work. I mean, we're created to work, and we get fulfillment and joy out of that. And I think it's understanding that it's kind of a common denominator for humanity, that, you know, we get fulfillment out of having a job that we've done well, or seeing the fruits of a job well done.
And I think that's the challenge for all of us, is somewhere along the line, we're going to finish working. Now, maybe
it's because, you know, our life ended, or maybe it's because we just had the luxury of choosing to do what we wanted to do. But I think what Jonathan is saying is very simple. What kind of heritage are you leaving? What kind of trail are you leaving for other people to be successful? And that's kind of what we're doing here with Surfcast. Is our hope is that people will listen to something that is a true story, a legitimate story, a transformational story, and then choose places in which they can make investments in the world. And for you, it might not be setting up a coffee business in another country or on the other side of the globe, but it may just be beginning in your neighborhood and starting to create. Again, we hear this over and over and over. Create capacity for other people to be able to have opportunity for advancement. And it's not advancement for their own good and gain. In this episode and many others prior, and I'm sure those we'll have down the road, it's that making capacity, opportunity for people to experience the life-changing transformation that comes with a relationship with Jesus Christ. And we don't ever want to shy away from that, Tyler. We know we're made for more. We're made to make an impact. We're made to make a difference. So like Jonathan with coffee or some of the others that we've listed over the years, it doesn't really matter. The point is, start somewhere, make a difference. Hey, thank you for joining us at Surfcast.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today on Surfcast for our conversation with Jonathan David Golden. Be sure to pick up his book, Be You Do Good. Also, check out the coffee company, The Land of a Thousand Hills Coffee Co., and be sure to pick up some of their products and support a great cause and help make the lives of others better. If you like what you listened to today, you can be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. And if you want to join in on the conversation, maybe you have a question for William you'd like for him to answer on air, or you have suggestions for us, you can get those to us by emailing us at surfcast22, that's surfcast22@gmail.com. Again, thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on Surfcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Surfcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Surfcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guests, and no one else. Until next time, this is Surfcast, signing off from Studio 22.